This show is supported by Ocean View at Falmouth, an active, maintenance-free retirement community just minutes from Portland, offering a wide variety of independent living cottages, apartments, and peace of mind for the future with a care continuum. A family-owned main business for over 35 years, Ocean View at Falmouth is strongly committed to environmental sustainability and a cleaner future. More information can be found at oceanviewrc.com.
Welcome to Amjamba Time, Episode 5, a collaboration between Amjamba Africa and WMPG. My name is Jean Hakuzimana, and I'm your host tonight. News about business, economics, arts, health, politics, migration. This is what we bring from New Mainers to all Mainers. Here are our headline stories. Burundian human rights activist Maggie Barankitse will be our guest tonight. She sat down for a conversation with Amjambo's George Budagu.
Chaque enfant de Dieu devrait dire enough is enough. Trop c'est trop. C'est ce que je demande.
Don't miss her. Immigrants can make their voices heard in Washington. It is a way to make meaningful contributions to their countries of origin. We'll have a debate between influential New Mainers from Africa and Gail Smith, the CEO of One Campaign. Updates from Augusta. The legislative session is over for this year. What should New Mainers know? May is Asian American Heritage Month, and Amjambo celebrates with a new monthly feature, Moonglade. The editors will be with us tonight. And on the African continent, where we'll talk about sex scandals plaguing the Miss Rwanda pageant, the organizer and some previously crowned winners are behind the bars to face charges.
Remember Jumbo Time.
Jumbo Time is brought to you by Jean Hakuzimana and airs every second Friday of the month from 7 to 7:30 p.m.
Oh, this way. Yeah, mama way.
Maggie Barankitse from Burundi, a human rights activist who has won numerous international prizes, has received an honorary doctorate from North Carolina's Duke University, where she is an occasional speaker. While in the U.S. during April, she checked in on the Burundian main community to give them a message of peace, her words. She sat down with Amjamba for an interview. Known for telling truth to power, she now lives in Rwanda, where she fled after being put on a death list by the late Burundian President Nkurunziza. She is the founder of Maison Shalom, or House of Peace. Central Africa has been war-torn for over 4 decades, but Barankitse foresees peace.
J'ai une confiance triomphante en Dieu qui est amour. Et je suis convaincue que la paix reviendra dans ce pays. Parce que nous avons de beaux exemples, que ce soit le peuple d'Israël. Le peuple d'Israël.
I have faith in God, who is love. I believe peace will be restored in the Central African countries. We even have some examples. The Israelites spent plenty of years in slavery in Egypt, but God used Moses to bring them to their land against Pharaoh's will. When you see the cycle of violence in Central African countries, and when you know that more than 60% of the population are youth below 35 years old, with youth, you feel hope. These young people will liberate the region from poverty. It will push us to do the right things, and we will be happy because of their work. And that is why I lead this fight. All these seeds we are planting will rise. And as Christians, we don't have to despair, because God says, "Be of good cheer. I have overcome the world, and I will be with you till the end of time."
Puisque je suis aux États-Unis, à la diaspora de la région des Grands Lacs.
I will say this since I am in the U.S. You, diaspora from Central African countries, you have a loud voice. Use it to protest. Denounce the international community's complicity to not stand for suffering communities in the Central African countries.
À cette communauté de la région des Grands Lacs. Allez le dénoncer.
And tell all the corrupt leaders of our African countries that, like Gandhi said, all the dictators that have lived on earth have finally fallen. Truth will always prevail. I want as many citizens of our region to carry this message in their hearts as possible. I want them to stand up for their dignity, to not sell their souls for temporary benefits. Like we say in our culture, it is better to be in the grave than being a useless person. We have many examples of people like Esther in the Bible who stood for their communities and won. I was raised by Grandpa, and he told me that we only have two moms, a biological one and a country. A country is our mom, and we need to defend it at any cost.
Une maman biologique qui nous a porté pendant 9 mois et qui nous a donné la vie et un pays. Quand tu n'as pas de pays, quand tu deviens apatride, tu n'as rien. Une patrie, c'est une maman. On doit oser le défendre. Comme Rosa Parks se lever pour refuser de sortir du bus.
We also have Rosa Parks, who boycotted bus injustice in the American Civil Rights Movement.
Parce que c'était le bus destiné aux blancs. Il a refusé la tenue tête. Quand il y a des injustices sociales, chaque baptisé, chaque enfant de Dieu devrait dire basta. Enough is enough. Trop, c'est trop.
When we have social injustice, every child of God should rise up and say, enough is enough.
Immigrants are called to make their voices heard loud in Washington and make meaningful contributions to their native country's development. Could it be? I'm Jambo Time to talk to New Mainers from Africa and Gare Smith, the CEO of One Campaign, after a round table discussion they were having in Portland, Maine.
My name's Gail Smith. I'm the CEO of something called the One Campaign, which is an advocacy organization that, in shorthand, tries to get politicians to do the right thing so that we can do more to end extreme poverty.
And you talked about diaspora.
Yes.
The right to pray in combating poverty back on the continent. Do you have some tips?
Well, look, I think one of the things that sometimes we underestimate in the United States, particularly at times when our politics seems a bit goofy, is like, do we really have an impact at the national level? Does anybody really care what we think? They actually do. And so one of the things I would say is that the African diaspora spread across the United States, I mean, it's huge, it's diverse, it's powerful, it's engaged, it's a big voice. And I think the more decision makers hear from that big voice or those big voices, the better. Again, they're constituents that vote. They're vibrant parts of America's population. So don't ever underestimate the importance of your voice being heard, particularly if Congress takes a vote on something that may seem sort of obscure, and then suddenly they hear from 50 people who say, why did you vote against that? It'll get their attention. So I think that's one thing. And I think the other thing, and it's one of the things we've been discussing with you all today, is that there's some big policy moves, whether they are about assistance or investment packages or policy, where if we knit together the voices across this country that really care about those things, the diaspora, community organizations, groups like the One Campaign, many of our partners, we can get some of these big things over the finish line. So that's the other way we can join forces and get some big things done.
After Gail Smith, I talked to Mahmoud Hassan, president of Somali Community Center of Maine. He has a strong point of view on how the diaspora can contribute to the economy of their countries of origin.
I think we can support in encouraging sustainable development. Support in the small industries, manufacturing, even agriculture, and also finding markets for businesses that exist in Africa. There are a lot of entrepreneurs, there are a lot of people with good ideas and good education, but sometimes they need the support and investment to grow and do well. And I think that the technical know-how, the markets that we have here, if we can make that connection, I think we can help businesses and economies grow back home.
Africa being a risky spot,
Risky spot. It depends. I mean, Africa is a big continent. It's 53 countries and plus, with all different political atmosphere and political dynamics. I'm sure there are a lot of places where it's very stable governance, very stable system, very peaceful. Risk is it all depends. How you say risky? I don't think when you say Africa in general is riskier than any other place on earth. But there are some places that are risky in Africa, for sure. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for growth and a lot of opportunity for investment in the continent overall. The demographics, the percent of youth, and even the growth in general in population, that definitely is going to dictate investors' ideas and dictate economies for sure. In the near future, people are going to find out that that's a good place to do business, and they definitely want to be.
Do you see some challenges?
Of course, there's always a challenge. I'm not there for sure to begin with, and I'm not on the ground in Africa. I'm here, but I travel back and forth. And I think the biggest challenge in Africa is the disunity. There's no common market systems that there are some going on in East Africa, right? The East African Economic Council or something like that, the ECOWAS in West Africa. But we need a unified continent-wide economic system, unified tariffs, unified customs. If we ever get to that point, Africa is going to take off. And I think the economy is going to take off.
The second regular session of 130th Main Legislature opened on January 5 and has now concluded. Amjambo's Uria Aligulova followed closely bills pertaining to new mainers, and she'll take us through some key outcomes.
Affordable housing shortage has definitely been a huge topic in this session, and since Portland and the rest of Maine has been experiencing a really big increase in the number of immigrants coming from, like, American citizens, as well as refugees and asylum seekers coming to the state. And there have been several bills actually that are attempting to provide solutions to this housing crisis. So three of the biggest bills have passed. That's LD 1673, an act to create a comprehensive permit process for construction of affordable housing. Then there's LD 473, an act to create the Maine Rental Assistance and Guarantee Program, and LD 2003, an act to implement the recommendations of the Commission to increase housing opportunities in Maine by studying zoning and land use restrictions. So all of these three bills, they have passed to be enacted, and once they're signed by Governor Mills, they will become law, and hopefully they will make it easier to build more affordable housing units to fill the gap that we're experiencing. Racial equity was definitely a big topic as well. The bill in LD 598 that was introduced by Senator Daughtry is seeking to prohibit discrimination in employment and school based on hair texture and hairstyle. And this primarily affects BIPOC populations. It's also known as a Crown Act, and similar legislation has been introduced all around the country. And the governor has signed it into law. So that was a very big success. Then there are two very high-profile bills that have received a lot of public support. This session, they were LD 1610, an act to promote equity in policymaking by enhancing states' ability to collect, analyze, and apply data, and LD 174, an act to implement the recommendations of Ending Hunger by 2030 Advisory Group. Both have passed the Senate and the House, and have both recently been signed into law by Governor Mills. Another big topic was tribal sovereignty. And there were a lot of tribal sovereignty bills that received enormous support, especially thanks to the efforts of the Wabanaki Alliance. They had like really great turnout for their rallies. They've collected, I think, close to 2,000 testimonies in support of three big sovereignty bills. So they are LD 1626, an act to implement recommendations of the task force on changes to Maine Indian Claim Settlement Implementing Act. So basically this act of 1980 strips Penobscot Nation and other tribes of certain rights that are afforded to other federally recognized tribes around the country.
Can you tell us about the next session?
The next session is like still a little while away. I'm sure that housing bills are still going to be a priority, because the housing crisis, sure, like even though we passed a few bills to ease it, like it's still a huge crisis, and we will have to continue working on it. And the housing is still going to be like a hot issue that we'll still, I'm sure, we'll be covering in the next session. And also we're seeing a trend with a lot of racial equity bills, which I think will continue increasing. We'll probably have a few more bills on racial equity in the next session.
This show is supported by Ocean View at Falmouth, an active, maintenance-free retirement community just minutes from Portland, offering a wide variety of independent living cottages, apartments, and peace of mind for the future with a care continuum. A family-owned Maine business for over 35 years, Ocean View at Falmouth is strongly committed to environmental sustainability and a cleaner future. More information can be found at oceanviewrc.com.
And Jamo celebrates with a new Mafri feature, Moonglad. The editors, Muffin Chan and Coco McCracken, talk about challenges facing Asian Americans and more. Take a listen.
My name is Marfin Chan, and I'm a co-editor of the Moonglade section and president of the Cambodian Community Association, or what is now known as Khmer Maine.
Let's talk about Asian American heritage, Ma. How is it going?
I think this marks a year since the Atlanta shootings in Georgia of the six Asian women that set off a movement across the country, the Stop Asian Hate movement. And I think now that it's been a year, it's even more pressing and even more important that we recognize this month, because I think Americans, just like they need to know the contributions and the history of indigenous folks, of African immigrants, and Latinos and Hispanics, and other minority groups, knowing the contributions of the Asian, American and Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander populations is also important. And because we've started arriving in America since the mid-1800s. In Maine, Chinese immigrants were here in the late 1800s, I believe, and they opened up a laundry space and on Congress Street, and then a Chinese restaurant, one of the first. And so we've had a long history of being in Maine and in America, you know, building the Japanese and the Chinese laborers that built the railroad, Indian folks who migrated to America in the 1940s and 50s, I believe, and then another wave of Chinese immigrants during the 1950s and 60s, wave of Korean immigrants during the Korean War, the Vietnamese coming over during the Vietnamese War, and then, of course, Cambodians after the Khmer Rouge and the Cambodian genocide. Ever since then, we've still struggled to fit into the fabric of America and American culture and society. And our plan is to raise and lift up the voices of Asian Americans Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians, and Desi Americans in Maine. And we have our work cut out for us because it's both small space, but also, you know, finding those voices, finding those creative people, those writers, those photographers, those artists, and highlighting the diversity of our community, that it's as diverse as other immigrant communities and as the dominant community, the white community, that, you know, Asian Americans aren't, you know, just good at running a restaurant, or Asian Americans aren't just, you know, good at polishing nails. There are Asian Americans that are creative and artistic and innovative, entrepreneurial, and are willing to take on big challenges that Maine is facing. And so that's part of the goal of Moonglade, is to tear back the curtain, to take away the veil, so that people can see us fully as who we are.
Coco McCracken also talked to me. She laid down the plan of how they are going to reach out to people in the community.
The actual population, it is quite small when you put it in percentages. You know, I believe in the 1.3% was last time I checked. But that just sounds small because it's a percentage. When you break that out into actual thousands of people, there's a lot. And especially the growing, you know, amount of diversity happening. So we, other than, you know, in the pages of M. Jambo and this podcast, which is so amazing, and congratulations, by the way, on this really cool podcast, we want to get to students and into the schools. So we're planning on figuring out how to access some of the school boards here in Maine and start there, because I think the most exciting voices are the ones that we haven't heard yet.
So why do you call it Moonglade?
Well, it's just such a pretty name, and we were surprised when we looked at the term. Literally, is you know, when you're looking at a body of water at night and the moon reflects on it. Mm-hmm. That's actually, there's a term for that, and the term is Moonglade, which we thought was just a beautiful image, especially being from Maine. You know, in a lot of Asian cultures, the moon and the lunar calendar are very, very important symbols. Have a lot of spirituality involved with that. And glade, you know, especially coming back to the main idea of forestry, a glade is a clearing. So we wanted it to feel like this was a space that we've cleared for community to share their stories. Storytelling really does give confidence. I think about this in terms of public speaking, right? If you've never done any kind of public speaking, it's terrifying. But maybe the next time you're around a dinner table with friends, you share a quick toast, and those toasts get easier and easier, and soon you're speaking into a room full of people. I think the same with making change in your community. You know, maybe at first, before you write an article for the newspaper, you tell a story to your in-laws that you weren't sure about, and or a couple of friends around you. I think starting small is so powerful, and who knows what could happen when it grows. And, you know, maybe that first step is submitting something to us at Moonglade, a poem, your photography, your story. We want to hear from you.
Before we conclude the show tonight, let's take a minute to talk about Rwanda, one of the annual events that connects Rwanda and their diaspora communities. Is the Miss Rwanda pageant. It takes place annually and ends with one young woman crowned Miss Rwanda out of many contestants. Widely promoted and with the involvement of the Rwandan Minister of Youth and Culture, this event was caught up in scandal this week. The organizer, Ishimwe Dieudonne, also known as Prince Kid, is now in jail for charges of sexually assaulting a number of contestants, including asking for sex in order to win the crown. This according to accounts from the Rwanda Bureau of Investigation. And one of the former winners, Miss Radukunda Erisa, is also in jail for allegedly trying to interfere with the judicial investigation. Maine has been home to two Miss Rwanda, among them a graduate of Bates College of Lewiston, Maine. I'm Jumbo Time will keep an eye on this developing story. But let's listen what the Rwanda diaspora in the U.S. says.
It is very sad that Miss Rwanda lost its way along the journey. But also we celebrate the effort of the former organizers of Miss Rwanda, from where they picked it up to where they have taken it and what they made it to be. It is really remarkable. So what I think is that in case the Rwanda Inspiration backup leader is found not guilty, I would wish that he keeps on organizing it as he was doing it and continue to push Miss Rwanda forward. But in case he's found guilty of all the charges against him, then Ministry of Youth and Culture should hire a team of smart and special people who understand pageant and who are dedicated to keep the vision Miss Rwanda holds. So I would also wish that they change the age from 18 at least to 21, because it is becoming very clear that these young girls of 18 years old are still young to make smart decisions of their lives during this Miss Rwanda process.
After this sexual scandal, I wish there should be some changes in Miss Rwanda. You know, ethically, you're not supposed to make advances at someone you were a senior at your workplace. That's the problem. That's sexual exploitation. So I'm glad that some girls have finally broken their silence. But I think the Ministry of Youth or Culture should oversee these beauty events, and the company should have mixed team members, both women and men, especially the CEO. Because it looks like the CEO is overseeing everything and nobody else is in charge of this. And being in charge of a company like that, in charge of these beauty events with all those girls, this is tempting, and I understand, but this should be changed. Women may be corrupted too, but if a company is led by one single man, this will be even harder. Another thing is that the ministry should put in place a third-party organization that is anonymous, like anonymous agency where girls can report any sexual harassment incidents.
In the future, I'm expecting to see Miss Rwanda come back stronger with all kind of managerial entities such as board and board members, executive committee, and all its activities and actions subject to internal and external audit. Fairy is normal. The wise will step on it and will reach to greater hate.
Miss Rwanda sexual scandal. This is a critical time for the Rwandan beautiful girls, and a critical time for the organizers of this competition. We want to have this competition organized by a state agency, a very competent state agency, so that such horrendous actions will never happen again. It's a shame to the nation that has been promoting women equality and women rights to hear that they have been abused to be crowned Miss Rwanda. So we expect the government to step in and ensure that this will never happen again.
I've come to the end of today's Jumbo Time.
This show is supported by Ocean View at Falmouth, an active, maintenance-free retirement community just minutes from Portland. A family-owned main business for over 35 years, Ocean View at Falmouth is looking to fill a variety of positions, including housekeeping servers, maintenance techs, dishwashers, nurses, and caregivers. They offer training and opportunities for those working to improve language skills. For an application or more information about job opportunities, call Christy at 781-4460.